Thanks for downloading this episode. If you have not yet subscribed, please do. Every subscription helps, and you get to hear other stories behind the pink ribbon each week. On this episode, Julie Caputo joined us on the podcast. She was diagnosed with stage 2B invasive lobular cancer at the age of 49. She shared that she had a pain in her left breast, which is why she went to get the exam in the first place, but it wasn't even related to cancer. She also talked about her treatments, her support system, and how having unrelenting positivity has been a key factor in her road to recovery. Take a listen in. Welcome to Behind the Pink Ribbon, where we share stories, information, and other content related to breast cancer. My name is Melissa Adams. I am a 12-year genetic breast cancer survivor. I've learned so much through my own journey with breast cancer. I have met some amazing people along the way, many that have become lifelong friends. I have experienced the emotional roller coaster of a breast cancer diagnosis, heartache, anger, frustration, loneliness, and even gratitude. Through this podcast, we will speak to breast cancer survivors, supporters, and healthcare professionals to gain insight and understanding behind the pink ribbon. I'm here today with Julie. Julie is a newly diagnosed breast cancer survivor. She was diagnosed in March of 2019 with invasive lobular carcinoma. She was initially diagnosed as stage 1A. But after discovering some lymph node involvement, that was upgraded to 2B. So, Julie, I'm grateful to have you here on the podcast. So, welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you're really, first of all, I have to say, it's amazing that you were so willing to step forward at this point in your journey, just because it is so fresh. So I certainly applaud you for that. Personally, I don't know if I could have done it. So, you know, I really celebrate you for being able to share this and being so willing to share it.
Oh, thank you. Absolutely.
Yeah. So in terms of like finding the cancer, how did that come about for you? Did you, were you doing self-breast exams? Were you going in for a mammogram? Was there a lump? How did that all happen?
Well, the thing about invasive lobular carcinoma, now that I understand, is most people don't feel it by doing a breast exam. It grows in strands, so it doesn't, it's not encapsulated so that there's something that can be felt. I actually thought that my implants were getting old. They're about 12 years old, and I was mentioning it to a coworker that I was having pains in my rib right underneath my left breast. And she said, you know what, I think that you should go and definitely talk to somebody about that. But if you're due to go and get a mammogram, go and do that first. So I went into my doctor at my women's health center and told her about it. And honestly, if it hadn't have been for her being proactive, it never would have been caught because she didn't feel anything. She sent me in to get a mammogram. The mammogram didn't see it, but she followed it up with an ultrasound, and it was the ultrasound that caught it.
Wow.
And at the time, it was only, it was right there where I had this pain in my rib. However, the two are not related. I don't know if it was a God thing, God saying, you know what, you need to go get this looked at. I'm not sure. But right after I was diagnosed, that pain that I'd had for a very long time went away. So for whatever that is. Yeah. So so right after that, no, I didn't know anything about cancer. Nothing was said. It was just that there was something that was found. Let's go get... let's go get a, so after the ultrasound, it went to an MRI. They did an MRI on both of my breasts, again, saw that there was something there. That's all they said to me. And then I went in for a biopsy. When I went in for the biopsy, nobody has still mentioned anything to me about cancer. But when I sat down, the doctor came in that was going to do the biopsy, and she held my hand and she said, so now you know why you're here, right? Now I hadn't taken anybody with me because I just thought it was, you know, easy. And I said, yeah, you're going to do a biopsy. And she said, honey, there's a good chance you have cancer.
Oh, wow.
And so at that moment, yeah, at my world just stopped.
Yeah. I mean, so, Oh my gosh. I mean, I'm just kind of thinking like you were not even prepared at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't mean that any of us are truly prepared for this.
Right.
But at some point, somebody has a conversation with us and says, well, you know, there is a chance that this might be cancer. Let's kind of rule that out. But nobody had that conversation with you.
Nobody had that conversation with me. And so the doctor, for being proactive in everything that she did, I thank her. But when I went back in for a follow-up to discuss other things, other medical procedures I'm going to have done, I did say to her, that would have been very, very helpful if you would have done that. Because at the time, my coworker wound up going to appointments with me because of all things, my husband and my son were in Israel.
Oh my
doing, they were doing the holy trek. And so I found out I had cancer, but I was telling everybody at work, oh, I have to go and have, you know, this procedure done. And they're like, oh, I've had that. Oh, I've had that. You're fine. You're good. You're good. So that's what I had in my head was, oh, I'm fine.
Sure.
I'm okay. So I drove myself there and I cried my eyes out the whole way back. And at the time is I felt so alone.
Absolutely.
Had I known, I would have had my friend go with me again. I would have had somebody be there with me because now I'm getting into a car and all I could think about was, oh my gosh, I probably have cancer. I probably have breast cancer. And
right. Well, it's so interesting to me. I mean, there are lots of things about this already that are so fascinating to me. You know, number one, I didn't know that lobular really grew in strands versus being encapsulated and not being able to fill a lump. So, you know, that within itself really is a good reminder for people that just because you don't have a lump doesn't mean that something isn't there. And that just really stresses the importance of going and getting the mammograms.
And just looking at your breast, because the thing with it is the mammogram didn't pick it up, but there will be breast changes.
That's true. You did say that. Mm-hmm, the mammogram did not catch it.
No, it didn't. And that's a tough one for people too, because we say, go get a mammogram, but the mammogram, not all the time, but a lot of the times we'll miss it.
So
mine was only a centimeter. Got to remember this. It was only a centimeter long. And so when I go into the rest of my story with them saying, you're fine, you're everything, I wasn't. And it was only a centimeter. And most of the time when lobular is found, you're already at a stage four.
Well, I was going to say, if this is not being found on mammography, then, and did you have the 3D mammography? Or
I did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that within itself is problematic because now we have the 3D mammography and that's supposed to be, you know, the cutting edge technology and it's supposed to really be helpful in finding, you know, breast cancer. But if that specific kind of cancer is missed through even the 3D mammography and people aren't being pushed to go for an ultrasound, absolutely. I mean, all of these people that have this type of cancer, I would imagine would be higher stage.
They are.
So
typically they are higher stage.
Wow.
Which is scary. There's all kinds of different things that go with it. I'm just learning every day, but there's a lot that isn't known about this kind of a strand of breast cancer. Ductal obviously is the one that most people have.
Right.
There's a lot about this one that isn't, and they just, the doctors will just treat it. The oncologist will just treat it like they do ductal or any other. And there's not enough, down the road to know, are we treating it right or are we not treating it right? And so I'm just being treated like somebody with ductal and there's all kinds of, I mean, I could go into all the research that's behind it, but all I can do is just trust and just have faith that I'll be okay.
Absolutely.
You know, that I'll be cancer free. There's nothing else I can do.
Right. So are they currently doing research studies?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Good. Good.
Mm-hmm. I'm a part of a research group. I can just kind of watch and all the new, you know, the what's learned about it and just, you know, the studies and following people. But where I am right now in it, all I can do, there's a little bit of a higher chance of it coming back from what I understand. If it comes back, it'll come back in the brain, blood, or bones. Okay. And if it comes back, it comes back as stage four. And I think which mostly, I think even the ductal, it's that way. If it comes back, you're automatically, you know, chemo for life or whatever they say. But you know what? I've been through so much already, like, with this, that I can't go there. I just have to think about right now and fighting it. But yeah, nothing went quite the way that the doctors had told me that it would go, including the hospital. When I had to go into the hospital, nothing has gone the way that they thought.
I feel like, honestly, that is almost true for everyone. Like, they don't anticipate this, and you know, they kind of create their own stories around it. And I certainly don't mean any disrespect to any doctors or you know, medical staff. But I feel like they certainly do create stories around certain things that give us, I guess, this kind of false sense of
a false hope.
Yeah, hope or security or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that it's not done with ill will, but it certainly isn't always helpful either. So one of the things, you know, you talked about going in for that biopsy by yourself, which I am kind of surprised because at the point where I had to go in for my biopsy, I was told that I had to bring somebody with me. And at that point in time, I had not shared anything with my family. Nobody knew what I had gone through up to that point in time. And so they didn't say to you, like, bring somebody with you. This would be I mean, especially because at my biopsy, I was not told straight out the way that you were. However, the radiologist or the pathologist or whatever she was, she had given some indications. And so I'm just kind of curious, you know, so here you are now in this position of having this information. You are driving yourself. Your husband and your child are, you know, not even in close proximity to be able to support you. So what happened? I mean, how were you able to get home? I can imagine that you were probably terrified.
I think, yeah, I was, but I think I was more just numb. Like I didn't know what to think. I called my coworker, Mary Jess, who worked in the ER pretty much underneath a doctor. So she was very knowledgeable, and she was the one that, and her mother is a breast cancer survivor. So she was the one that I called, and she walked me through it, wound up going with me to my first appointment with the breast surgeon. And when I was sitting there with the breast surgeon, Mary Jess was listening to everything. I think I was just in a cloud. Like, I would hear something and that I would just go off on that in my head, and I didn't listen to anything else. Because somehow I just thought, oh, they'll just go in and I'll just take it out. Right? They'll just take out this cancer and fine, I'll be good again. And then the doctor said, well, okay, these are your options. We could do a mastectomy. We could do a double mastectomy. We could do a nipple sparing double mastectomy. And all of a sudden I just thought, wait, hold up. I'd never thought that, wait, hold on a minute. And that, so I had just started bawling, and I couldn't, there was nothing. I cried the whole way home in the car. And Mary just said, no, Julie, what she is saying is you have options, you know, what to do, but they could just go in and just take that out. But then if the margins aren't clear, what if it's in your lymph nodes? Right. So I just said, well, what would you do? And she said, after my mom went through this, I would do a nipple sparing double mastectomy, Julie, just get out. They said that they can go back in 4 months later and do the reconstruction, and you'll be fine, because the doctor told you that there's a very slight chance that it would, at only being a centimeter, that it'd actually get into your lymph nodes.
So wait, and so, was this at your, was this at your, what appointment was this at?
So this was the breast surgeon.
When did they, who called you and said, like, gave you the official diagnosis? Like
was it the doctor that you went to? That was the breast surgeon.
Oh, so the breast. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't even the doctor that you went to.
No. Initially. She had to refer me onto a breast surgeon and gave me a team of doctors who are fabulous. Wonderful, wonderful. But she's the one that sat there with Mary Jess and I that went over the official, what everything was and what it looked like going forward and what my options were and again, my husband and son are in Israel.
Right.
And I had to make a decision, and they wanted to get rolling on, you know,
right,
having the surgery.
So wait, they let, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You are so right on this, that nothing kind of went the way that it typically goes. No. And not that there's necessarily prescribed procedure mm-hmm. in this, but, you know, when I went to see my doctor mm-hmm. due to finding a lump, that doctor's office was the same mm-hmm. that called me to tell me about the diagnosis. I didn't have a breast surgeon mm-hmm. set up.
Yeah.
So they had already at that point in time had you kind of lined up, and that breast surgeon was the one that called you to say, this is what you have. This is the stage.
So I went to that was my OBGYN. That was the office that I went to that I always,
right,
you okay. know, just have my women's health. And what Dr. Tracy said to me was that I have cancer. I have breast cancer, is what she said. And she said, this is not an area that I am as knowledgeable in, and I don't feel, you know, really comfortable talking to you extensively about this, but I encourage you, I'm sending everything over to this breast surgeon. She is wonderful. She has a great team. And that's where that went. I want you to give her a call. I'm going to send everything over. So this breast surgeon, a couple days, it might have even been the next day, got us right in. Okay. And she was the one that sat with me and said, this is what you have. This is where it was found. Showed, you know, both of us on a little mannequin of sorts, and went over the whole thing. And this is what we need to do going forward. Said to me, you need to get a plastic surgeon. And this is the lady that I recommend. She's part of the team. And okay. It was just a whole bunch thrown at me.
That makes, at once. Yeah. Yeah, for so, sure. And that makes mm-hmm. a little bit more sense, because mm-hmm. I was just kind of thinking, like,
right,
you know, to have somebody that you may not mm-hmm. be familiar with call you and tell you that, mm-hmm. oh, you have cancer. So right. to know that somebody that was familiar called you makes me feel a little bit better.
And she not had that it's said about too, well, she had said too, that it was kind of all off in pathology, and that report and everything, really somebody that's going to go forward with my care needed to sit down with me and discuss it more. Sure. And that's what happened with that. And so absolutely. We did. And then I went to the, so to fast forward, it was supposed to be, I was going to go in for surgery. I chose to do the nipple sparing double mastectomy okay. just because I didn't want any chance of it coming back in the other breast, which lobular tends to. It tends to come up in different spots, and I just wanted to alleviate that possibility. And I was supposed to 4 months later get implants and get my reconstruction and beyond. And when I went into the hospital, now my husband and my son are back from Israel, and I'm in the hospital, but now my daughter is on her holy trek in Israel. And it was all pre-planned before, but I went in and everything was different. The doctors, both of them, had to go into my husband and my son and just say, yeah, we didn't see that coming. It's all in her lymph nodes, and this kind of just changes everything. And and I had a blood clot. I bled for 10 hours and wound up passing out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And this was, so when did you have the mastectomy?
April 10th.
April 10th. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be the next day. I was going to leave the hospital, but 10 hours after my surgery, I passed out. My blood pressure just hit the ground. And it was like Grey's Anatomy. All I remember is a team came running at me, and I was looking around like, what just happened? And they said I had a blood clot, and the blood clot caused extensive internal bleeding. And so I was there for a little bit. And,
okay.
And then, you know, I've just been going forward now ever since then with a bunch of little hiccups along the way, but
right. So did they
I see the light?
It's always kind of a hard place to, mm-hmm. you know, when you're kind of in the thick of it, to really mm-hmm. see that there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
There is.
So I totally can understand that. Like the moment mm-hmm. where you're like, I see light.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So awesome. Yay.
Yeah.
So in terms of, the, you know, you kind of talked about the margins a little bit. Did they find clean margins?
They just took everything out.
Okay.
So with a nipple sparing double mastectomy, I was able to do that, which a lot of people that have ductal, they're not able to have that option. And luckily that's one good in all of this is that I was. So the breast surgeon just took out all of the breast tissue and the plastic surgeon followed it up with just putting new implants in for me, which was nice because I had implants before. So they were able to do the implants, sewed me back up, opened me up again. So I have some pretty gnarly scars. But yeah, I know that they sent it all off to the pathology or pathologist. And then those reports came back and that's where they, at the end of my surgery came back and said I was now a 2B.
Okay. So no radiation, no need for
radiation. Oh no, I still have all of that. Yeah.
Oh, you do still have to do radiation?
So, so I did AC chemo, which is one of it is the Red Devil. I did that one first for 8 weeks. And then now I'm in the middle of Taxol. And that's what I'm saying. I see the light for this because I only have 5 left.
Okay.
But last week I went in saying I only had 5 left. And my my red count was low. So I had to have a blood transfusion. And then last week it was my white that was low. So I wasn't able to do chemo. Yeah. So I have, when I can get it done, I have 5 more left and then I get a little break and I start 5 weeks of radiation.
Okay.
5 times a week. And then technically I am done after that. I'll go and have my scan, but I'll be done with the cancer, trying to rid my body of the cancer. Right. And then after that, I have another half a year of a hysterectomy, hyperbaric chamber treatments, and then they're going to do the reconstruction just because everything's just needs to be kind of put back together after all of this.
Okay.
So I've still got time, but that part of it's fine. I just want them to tell me that right now they don't see any cancer in me.
So did they indicate that the cancer was estrogen or progesterone positive?
Yes. Okay. It is.
So do you then have to take, either tamoxifen or are you currently taking tamoxifen?
No, they're not going to start that until after I'm done, from what I understand, with chemotherapy. I'm hoping after radiation, but I think it's after chemotherapy. And the appointment that I had with Dr. Tracy was about getting a hysterectomy. I'm the only person with breast cancer in my family.
Okay.
So there is no history of it. So there's no history of it going to where it might go into my uterus or any of that. But I just want to go ahead and have that removed because this cancer could go there.
Okay.
So I asked the doctor, well, if I have that done, would I still need to be on those? And he said I was almost at 100% on both the estrogen and progesterone. That's how much my body was producing. He said, you're probably going to get shots and you're going to be on a pill, but, I don't want to be, of course, I don't want to be, they have some pretty interesting side effects, but, I don't ever want to have cancer again either. So I will do whatever they tell me to do.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of a hard balance.
It is. Is that what you're on then too?
Well, to be completely honest with you, I did 5.5 years of tamoxifen. I only did the tamoxifen because I was part of a research study. I had some pretty significant side effects from tamoxifen, some of which they're still not quite sure. However, I didn't have any of the symptoms prior to the tamoxifen. So they're not sure if endometriosis is connected or not.
Okay.
But I did end up with significant endometriosis. I had the hysterectomy and the oophorectomy, but I opted personally to not take the aromatase inhibitor just because of my experience with the tamoxifen. So, you know, it's always a personal decision for everybody, but, you know, certainly you have to, you know, kind of balance what it is, you know, for yourself. I would never, ever in a million years tell somebody to not do something because the way that, you know, the tamoxifen was in my body, is different from the way it's going to interact in somebody else's.
Yes. And that is true because I read, you know, the blogs and what people say about things. And I have to keep remembering that some people, things like these, this chemotherapy that I'm going through right now, I have no side effects. I'm breezing through it right now, but other people are sicker than sick. They've get, you know, all of these different side effects. So it's the same thing with doing these estrogen blockers. Is it may be okay for me and it might not be for the next person, and I'll still give it a try. Absolutely. But if it doesn't work, then maybe there's another one I can try. But I just have to keep reminding myself, because when I went into all of this, I was just, everybody in my family is like, get off the computer, because I was looking at what people were going through, and it was just making me cry.
Right.
Well, my experience through chemotherapy has not been a walk in the park, but it's certainly nothing like what I read that other people went through.
It's hard to stay off of the computer. The truth of that is, you know, when you don't have a family history of it, and you know, maybe you don't have very many people that were close to you that had breast cancer, you're just trying to find all the information that you can possibly get.
Right.
And reading stories, because I did the exact same thing. I do have the family history. However, it came from the paternal side of my family, but I'm not super connected to them.
Yeah.
You know, I was kind of in that same position where I felt very alone. And that's where I turned to as well.
Yeah. There's a lot of information out there too. I have a chemo box, and I'm going to put it in there, and it's just a page on the front and back of things that people said worked.
Right.
And so there's a lot of, I shouldn't have read that because it's scaring me, but there was little nuggets that I got that made my experience better, because I did look and find out, well, what happens if I have this side effect, or how can I have this be, you know, what can I take that's a vitamin that will help me so I don't get this? And so there's a lot of good out
there.
So
what were some of those things? Like, if you recall, what were some of those things that were helpful? I mean, now that we're sharing, you know, that would be great for our listeners to have.
Well, let me just pull out my little sheet here and I'll tell you. Yeah. I have, what I'm going into radiation, I'll tell you that one first, is some people put lavender on their skin before. I have about how much water you should drink. Person said to do Aquaphor in the morning and then put pure aloe after their treatment. This is for radiation.
Yeah.
Avocado oil 2 to 3 times between, you know, these hours and everything. And she said, I never got any radiation burns. So that's kind of where I'm thinking right now, going ahead, is what can I do to my skin to prep it? Horsetail vitamins help hair grow back. Uh-huh. Right now I'm dealing with the possibility of getting neuropathy.
Okay.
And I read that if you do the B complex and the glutamine,
mm-hmm.
I did that, and I don't have, so far, knock on wood, I have no neuropathy.
Oh, wow.
And that's with the Taxol, about getting a fuzzy pillow for when my hair started growing and it was like it is right now and it's prickly. So all kinds of little things, because there was nerve pain, hot flashes, eye twitch. So I think that looking for those kinds of things that worked for people were the nuggets that I was looking for. And I think there was one time I asked on one of my sites, I said, I just read about all of the negative. I'm starting chemo. Can anybody tell me that they got through it fine? I just want somebody to give me something that's encouraging. And man, it blew up with all of the encouragement. Oh, I did fine. This is what I use. This is what I drank. This is the vitamin I took. And then I started getting the thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
I've been crying for days reading this. And it's like, no, tell me what's positive. And when I went into the nurse, she said that's 90% of it.
Right.
When my very first day at chemo, 90% of it is your attitude going into it. And I thought, then I am going to, then that's what I'm, and I know you probably have to get going here, but that is what I have held on to. And the nurse said to me, we have a saying here at the oncology office. It's called unrelenting positivity. And I wrote it in my book, and I had a sign made and I brought it back to them.
Oh,
and it's hanging up in there. And I had one made for me too, and it's hanging on my wall.
Oh, that's
unrelenting
awesome.
Positivity.
I love that.
That's how we get through it every day.
That's it.
When I watch the world moving around me and I feel like I'm in a, you know,
yes.
I'm in this time warp right now where every day is consumed by fighting cancer. Right. I have that unrelenting positivity that this too shall pass. And I got to do right now what I got to do so that I am back out there again.
Right. Yeah. And that's, I mean, I can definitely relate to those feelings. And even though it's been so long ago for me, I do remember, you know, the world just was spinning around me, and I felt like I was just standing still.
Yeah.
And just, you know, kind of standing there all by myself and not really quite sure what to do.
Yeah.
So, but I love the unrelenting positivity because I think that's so powerful for other people to hear. And, you know, just you talking about seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, even if it's a small glimpse of it, you know, it's there. So that's great. So one of the things, you know, I want to ask you, because you are so fresh into this, what are some things that you have used for support? What has kind of helped you other than obviously that unrelenting positivity? But, you know, anything that maybe family has done for you or, you know, I have heard you talk about kind of the online support groups and things like that. But is there anything else that has really been helpful for you kind of going through it?
Well, my faith, I don't know how people can go through something like this that is seriously a life-changing event. I'll never be the same person again. And that's not a negative. I won't be. I'm a changed person after this, but my faith has carried me through this. I work for a church, and the people that I work with and for have rallied around me in a way that it just brings me to tears about what they have done for me and how they have helped me and how they have lifted me up and encouraged me. I'm very fortunate in that my husband and I have moved 14 times. We've lived all over the place. And so I have a very, very large circle of friends.
Yeah.
And this is one thing that I will, what I did do for my church is memorial services. And one of the things that happens to these people when we talk about grief is that they'll go through, like, say you've lost a loved one and you're going through the stages of grief. And at the very beginning, everybody's there and they're sending you presents and their cards and flowers. And that's what happened to me. Big boxes full of stuff. And you just get so consumed with that, it takes your mind off of the big picture. I have cancer or I lost, you know, a loved one. Both of them are very similar in that I had so many people loving on me and sending me things. And then everybody goes back to their jobs and their life. Yeah. And the same way that what happens when somebody that is grieving, and I encourage family and friends for those people to remember that you're going back to your life, but they're still going to be going through the empty chair, the Christmas without their loved one. Well, it's the same thing for somebody that has cancer. Everybody is there. The meals came and the support, but when everybody went back to their life, that's when my grief kicked in. That's when I was flooded with emotions that I didn't know why. I would just start crying. And I didn't know who to reach out to and who to talk to because everybody had already come around.
Right.
You know, they'd already given me the gifts it wasn't the gifts. It was just that I needed somebody just to keep checking in to see how I was doing.
Absolutely.
And then it kind of just picked itself back up again. And, daily, how are you doing, Julie? Do you need anything? So what I tell people is if you know somebody that's going through this, know that they're going to need you, but they're going to need you for a lot longer than the first couple weeks of the diagnosis or after that that surgery. They're going to need you for a year as they try to figure out their new normal. And that's just like somebody that's grieving the loss of a loved one. It's an emotional roller coaster I've never been on and never want to be on and never wish on anybody.
Right. I would agree with that. Exactly what you just said. And you said it beautifully because that is it. And it's not really about the gifts and it's not about anything else. It's just knowing that somebody is there. And, even after a year, sometimes it's still nice to have people because your life, you are really grieving the life that you had prior to the cancer, knowing that what comes next will never be that same life. Like it'll never change. Right.
So, and that is true. That's what I have said to people is, oh, how are you doing? Well, I miss my life.
Yeah.
I miss what it used to be like. I miss being able to feel me because I feel like I have plastic wrapped all around me now. I don't have any feeling anymore. There's so many, I look at myself and I have scars all over me. Mm-hmm. And it's a reminder when you have cancer and you're going through it, it's every minute of every day.
Yes.
And in the nighttime when I can't sleep because I have steroids in me and I feel alone. I feel so alone. But I have, you asked me what I do. I love books. And so I pour into these books and it takes me away from what I'm going through so I can learn about something else. And that's what I'm doing right now is, and I'm looking into furthering my education because I'm a sponge. I just want to learn. And that's what I'm doing as a distraction from this. I don't color and people color that. I don't, I read and I try to be around people as much as I can. So I'm not alone.
Right. Well, those are great pieces of information and tips. And I thank you so much again. I can't really even thank you enough, quite honestly, again, for coming on and sharing your story, especially because you are so much in the throes of this and having such great information to share and being so open. I do want to give a big shout out to our mutual friend, Heather Burkhart, who referred you to be on the podcast. I certainly, she is definitely a light
in
this world. And so, I'm thankful that both of us know her and I'm beyond grateful that you were here with us today. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Behind the Pink Ribbon. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you or anyone you know would be interested in sharing your story, please send an email to podcast@behindthepinkribbon.com.
You've been listening to Behind the Pink Ribbon, produced by American Creative Consulting, mixed and mastered at Riverview Podcasting Studios. For more information, please visit designbyacc.com.